special guest, Mr. Lawrence Rowe, all the way out of South Florida.
Florida.
Good evening to you, sir. Happy New Year.
Good evening,
Christmas
gentlemen.
Well.
How are you guys doing?
Good evening, Mr.
Good.
Rowe.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Good evening. Good evening. Everybody
good evening.
Good?
Yes.
Yep.
Good as good could be.
When we are saying good evening, we cannot eliminate Mr. Lawrence Yagaro.
I have a question for you because we have a lot of questions for you. First question to you. I'm going to give you three questions if you could remind. Why do they call you Yaga? And who was the fastest bowler ever faced? And do you have a cricket joke you might have shared with any batsman when you're batting in the wicket with them? Can you answer those first?
The Yaga thing is always very long. But I try to give you guys a short version of it, you know. We used to go to this field when I was young, and we had to walk through some lanes to get there. And one day we assembled at my friend's house. And just out of the blue, I just started singing Yaga Yaga Yaga, going to Yaga Yaga to see Yaga Yaga. Ever since that day, the guys them called me Yaga ever since that day. Yeah, so it came out of a lousy song I was trying to make, probably a rock song at the time. Eh?
All right.
And
now we know.
And the second one, the fastest bowler, probably I would say outside our boys, I would say Thompson probably was the quickest that I played against. But as I mentioned to a few people who has played the game, you have run into quite a few people from time to time who sometimes just slip the ball onto you so quickly. Yeah, some of them not very well-known people in world cricket, but some of them was really, really slippery, you know. Come off the wicket quick at you.
What about those Australian bowlers?
Wait a moment, dear. Come here. Wait a moment. The cricket jokes.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Ian Thompson was really the man that I believe was the cricket player played at you.
Okay, okay.
I think in our fellas there, I think Mikey was the quickest of the lot.
Oh, okay.
Mikey Holding.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was the quickest. At his best, he was the quickest.
At his best. All right. Whispering Death, they called him, right?
Yes. Yes. Very smooth,
and the cricket joke. The cricket joke that you want to share with us.
The cricket joke. I'm still thinking about that one. That's what I'm trying to come up with.
Okay. We got a guy on the show named Virgil. He bowls quick, and he wishes that he would be able to bowl to you too much so to get you wicked. Virgil.
well, I wouldn't challenge him now.
Well,
when I was about 24 years old, I'd welcome you.
I'm Virgil. I live in the beautiful city of Lauderhill. I see you now and then. You don't really know, but I see you now and then around the place, especially when you come to cricket and so on.
Okay.
I guess that one was a cricket joke, Rose Green. I was not as fast as what he said, but I was a left-hand swing bowler.
Okay.
Yeah, one of my questions, I heard they said you used to whistle, and then I think something during one of those games, somebody come and ask you something, why you stop whistling, or something of a sort. I would like to know about that.
Yes, I did, but it was a deep form of concentration because I was not even aware sometime when I was whistling. It was such a deep form of concentration. When I get into that, I walk with. And a little joke here. This you might put down as a cricket joke. In that, when I was playing against England in 1974, I think it was I can't remember his name now. He was at he was batting and I was at first slip fielding and just out of the blue the whistling start. And he stopped the game and said to the umpire, Keith Fletcher, stopped the game and said to the umpire, is there a budgie around here somewhere? You know, budgie is a bird, you know. There are budgies around here somewhere because I was disturbing him, you know.
Yeah.
I was at first sleep and then all of a sudden, you know, just get into that deep form of concentration and the whistling came out, you know.
There you go. It
sounds better than me.
We got a guy
that's so much better than
me. Let me give another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I can go?
Yes.
Okay,
on,
I am from Antigua, and my number one Batman, really honest, is Vivi Richards. I can remember 1986, I was at the doctor office because I had get my back damaged, and I was there for the doctor to write me a paper to go to the embassy. And then I see everybody was going to the park. I never realized when Vivi Richards make the fastest test 100. I never realized that was the fastest test 100 until years after I see some of the tapes and that was proven. In your years of batting with Vivi Richards, do you ever see any other batman in the world as fair as, I mean, as brilliant as Viv Richards?
There has been some players who have been up there, but I think Viv is probably the most brutal batsman that we have produced. And when I say brutal, he was very attacking and fearless. Also with grace, you know. I remember batting with him at the Oval in 1976 when he made that 291. A lot of people didn't know I think it's 70 I made in that system. And we were batting, and quite recently I've been looking back at some of the clips on YouTube, and sometimes when we were batting, I couldn't differentiate between Viv and myself, especially when we were playing one or two cover drives we played together in that innings that we played. And he had, at that stage of his career, he had really blasphemed to be really and truly the greatest batsman in the world at that period.
Okay. Audley has a special day to present to you. Audley, tell him what date it is.
Yes, Sir Lawrence Yaga. Did you know that today marks the 38th anniversary of you when you make your debut against New Zealand? It was the 16th of February 1972.
Oh,
did you know?
Just like you said. Just like you said, Audley.
No, I never know at all. Can you believe that? I never know at all, man.
Yes.
I should be having some champagne tonight, man.
Yes. That's why we made it.
How many years is
it?
38. 38. You made the debut back in 1972.
As a 23-year-old.
Yeah.
That record is 38 years old and still standing, eh?
Mm-hmm. Right, still standing.
38
years
old and still standing. I'm the only person who have done that, and have you?
Yes.
I think it's, indeed.
The only person.
I think it's still two records in one. The highest aggregate on debut.
Right.
And the only man to score a double and a single.
And you're
you are right.
And then,
yes.
You are right.
Awesome.
So
congratulations,
right.
Man. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
And there's something else again. There seemed to be something with you in February, because you actually played your last test match in February also. And guess what? Against New Zealand too. That was the 29th of, that was the 29th of February, a leap year like this year, 29th of February 1980 was when you played your last match.
Wow, wow,
wow. Yes. Some more for the book.
I think I made 50 something in that test match. In the first, not that test match, I made 50 something. Coming off 100 in the second test at Christchurch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think I made 58 in my last. I made 100 in the second test at Christchurch. I'm 58. And I think 58 and a small dose in the second and the third.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, just to keep it up
so
to date
February,
a little bit.
February has been a remarkable month for me, huh?
Yes.
Yes, February. And
yes,
you're born in January. So just next
yes,
note to
yes.
the month, you're born in January.
Yes.
January
8th. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Cardinal?
Yes. Okay. My question
yes.
now, is
okay,
that over the,
yeah.
over the years, you've had... two legend matches, you know, two of those matches with the legends, the Lawrence Rowe Foundation. I know that
yeah.
you haven't had any over the past few years. So, is any of those matches are into the works in the near future? And if you should bring it back, should it be like every other year or, you know, every 3 years or something like that? Anything like that in the works?
Yes, we are right now we are doing some... a little work on trying to get it to Barbados for the end of the year.
Mm. Okay.
We are trying to do some work on that. We don't know how it's going to materialize yet, but that's what we're looking. And in South Florida, we still want to do it, but as you know, a lot of the legends, especially the ones who draw that kind of an interest, is getting much older now. They can't move around as well as they used to. So even if we do it, we will have to limit it to a few and then try to get a few of the younger ones. Try to get a few of the younger ones to be here. And then what happened with us is that the stadium had cost us so much when we put on the game at
okay.
the stadium. And then it didn't materialize financially for us or what we the purpose of what we wanted to do, you know.
Yeah.
So when we do it back here, we probably would have to use a smaller ground than the stadium itself because that costs so much. We'd have to get it a smaller place, and we would probably do the game, a no charge game where the game would be free, and we'd have to go into getting more sponsorship for the game. So we're looking somewhere like up in Oakland Park, you know, the ground at Oakland Park. Looking to
mm-hmm.
say put a nice game on there. It would be free for the public, and then we would do the dinner as we normally do. We do the dinner, the banquet.
Okay.
So we have some things in the works that we are looking to try to get it going. As I say, We are doing some studies now in terms of trying to get it. We are working with some people trying to get it to Barbados at the end of the year. So as soon as we finalize it, we will announce it. And then the following year now we'll look back to come back to South Florida with something.
All right.
Okay.
Can I just make a suggestion there with something there? Wait, just one second there, please. When you were talking about some of the legends getting older, I'm going to make a suggestion to you. I will be the super run-up. So I'll run up and give him one of them the ball and let him deliver the ball. Is that a good idea? That's the super run-up bowler.
Run up from all the back to coming from.
I am not sure if that would be enough help to some of us now.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I am not even sure it would be enough help. You know, but it's good and in fact, the legends are really, when we do it and we bring the guys here, it's really the camaraderie with the community and the, the Caribbean people who had seen them over the years never got close to them, and now can get close to them and talk to them, and we can reminisce about the past and, you know, some of the great times of West Indies cricket that we enjoy. And that is the real purpose of the legend. And then we can, the public can give back, because normally when we do it, we try to put a package together for one or two players, you know. Unfortunately, the last time we did it, we were doing it on the Seymour Nurse, but it didn't materialize the way we wanted. And then, unfortunately, Mr. Nurse passed. I think about 6 months after we did the function, Mr. Nurse passed on. So we had lost Seymour Nurse and Basil Butcher. We lost him too. You know, so we are losing some of the former great. Lance is still around. Still busy.
Yeah.
Still busy. And
we have lost
South Florida Red.
Yeah, we have lost Desmond Lewis too. We're just talking about
him. Yeah,
terrific
Desmond
average.
Lewis.
And he was at one of the banquets, I remember.
He was at one of the banquets. You know. Yes, we lost him. Yes, but we still have quite a few people who are still young enough that can represent. We have a good mixture of some of the old stars who are not going to play. We can still bring in some of the younger ones who can play. Because the last time we had Dwayne Smith with us, we brought them in to play. Brian was always here, both years. Brian can still play. Portnoy Walsh was here the last time too, and people like Gus Logie and Larry Gomes and guys like those can still run around and still play a reasonable game, you know. Go ahead.
Go ahead, no, I thought you had finished. But finish it off, and then I come in. Okay, the next guy comes from the Virgin Islands. He has been practicing for about 20 years trying to imitate you, but there's no one can imitate you. Cardinal Mills. Cardinal? Cardinal?
Yes. Yes, hello. You know, I go back to the days when we used to listen to cricket by radio. And we have our little transistor in school, hiding in the desk. So, you know, cricketers were our first heroes. And if I were to sit down with you, I'd probably have a million and one questions. So I'm sitting here thinking about which two to ask you right now. But the one that comes to mind, or the first one that comes to mind, goes back to a tour that you would probably prefer to forget. And that is the 1976, 75-76 tour in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It was that tour was very puzzling to us. And it continues to be, as youngsters, you know, and it continues to be puzzling to me up until this day. Now, in 1975 in England, you know, Alvin Kalisharan had just taken on Dennis Lilly and Jeff Thompson, you know.
Yeah.
We got on
in the World Cup.
We got on to right. We got on to Australia at the end of 1975 and 1976. First test Australia won. We remember that. Second test West Indies drop a 2-1 on them. And then, you know, it's like as if West Indies went off the map. Jeff Thompson was hitting everybody. Kalisharan, Lloyd. Everybody
wants
and we couldn't understand why, you know, what happened after the second test. Could you give us your view on it as to what happened? I mean, you remember
the commentary
was that Clive Lloyd felt as if he was, you know, he was so distraught he thought about giving up the captaincy. That's the commentary that I heard.
No, I don't think so, because he was in,
okay.
A young captain, you know, and he had one in India and then won the World Cup. And then we went to Australia because Australia had just crowned England. They had beaten England, I think, 5-0 or something like that, or 4-1 or something. and broke up a few Englishmen and all that kind of thing. So they decided that they would, I don't think it was in the schedule at the time for us to meet Australia, but because we were a young team and was so we potentially so good, they decided to make the tour, and we did. And the first test match, if you remember the first test match well, as we go back, we had some bad luck in the first test, in that when we got a foothold in the game, the second innings we got a foothold in the game and we came back well in the game. I made 100 and Kalicher made 100 the second innings. And we got back in the game very well. And then Viv got run out between him and the line. He got nicked and got run out when we were supposed to push on the lead. Wherein if we had given them say about 300 to win the second innings, we would have probably won that first test. Because we drop a few catches in the run chase when they were chasing down 200 and something to win. And if we had just got it, Ian Chappell at that time, when he had came in, internally dropping a cotton bowl, and then from there on, you know, they took it away from us. But the second test match was in Perth, which was the quickest wicket in the world at the time.
Yes.
And we totally destroyed them in Perth because they were the first team that was calling for crash helmet when we met them in Perth. So what we have to remember now on that tour, it was Mikey Olden's first tour. He was like an experiment because he didn't have much first class behind him when we went to Australia. We had Van Buren, Olden, Keith Boyce as the other team fast bowler. Andy Roberts was the senior fast bowler at the period of the attack. We got both Boyce and Van Buren got injured. So when we went into the third test match, we were like a short on firepower. And we lost the third test. Competitive, but we lost. And by the time we reached the fourth test, we were more or less in serious problem because we had Andy Roberts as a spirit, inexperienced holding as the next quickest bowler, and then Van Buren and Boyce, who was the two other men we had to combat them. They broke down, and we had to use Bernard Julian, and then we had Lance there. So our attack was not as potent as it was early on to match up with them, and I can tell you, every state team that we played in Australia during that tour had two fast bowlers that could have played for Australia. So they had a lot of firepower going, and the wickets were quick. So we were against the ropes from the third test on. We were against the ropes in that our attack had lacked the firepower to stay with them. And apart from that, they were stealing like hell. They were bowling no ball like crazy. It was not all. They feel like crazy.
Yes,
feel like crazy.
Yes. Yes. We heard that.
So with all of that, I think we came out fairly well. Because if you look at the scorecard in most of the test matches, we competed very well. Most of the first season, we got over 300 runs. And almost all the first season, we got over 300. The second innings, no, we could maintain it. The second innings, because they had the firepower, the wickets were the quickest. We had only two players on that tour that had been to Australia before. Three. Lloydie, Fredo, and Lance. But the only three people who had played in Australia before. All of us, which was our first tour apart from those three. So these are some of the things that created the problem for us. But I believe that if we had, say, Van Buren or Boyce throughout the tour, it would have been a different series. There's no way it would have gone down the way it did.
Didn't you guys have a fear for Geoff Thompson?
Tell us again?
Didn't you guys have a fear for Geoff Thompson? Because you were
there was no fear of him. When I said fear, Yes, I mean, he was quick. There's no doubt at all about it.
Yeah,
but
me
not
was.
In the sense that you'd say we were afraid to play against them. Because if you look at it, we had one Ivy at 100 in the series, Callie at 100 in the series, Lighty got 100 in the series, Fredo got 100 in the series, Viv got 200 in the series, or 190 out of the series.
Okay.
90.
So,
mm-hmm.
So our top batsmen really had good performances.
And the 169 by Roy Frederick.
Yes, was one of the greatest test. Innings I've seen.
Yeah.
So although and all the wickets were extremely quick back then. I mean, today they are joke compared to what they were then. The wickets were extremely quick. And remember back then there was no helmet. It was only a protective thing for your guard, a protective guard, and some people had a little towel in their your left eye, but there's nothing else. So,
okay.
So batsmanship was you also had to protect yourself and get yourself in good position to play because there was nothing to protect you. Really, so if you get yourself in bad position, you were out of it for a long time because these guys were really quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So unlike today in the game where it has reached or where it with so much protection, people don't have to have as good technique as before.
Oh.
Before your technical skills had to be there. You know, your technical skills had to be there back then. Today you can lose a bit of that. And still perform well because you are so well protected. Because if the ball is to you change your helmet or you do something, you get somebody else and you're back normal. Back then, if you get hit, probably your career was done. You know,
okay.
I remember in Australia, I saw a guy called Rick McCusker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was one of the final hookers of the game I'd seen for a West there. And McCusker got hit. And that was the end of him. He was ashamed of himself after that. But never recovered.
I think
he was such a fine. Yeah. Was such a fine player. A guy called David Oaks too, who is now deceased. He got hit in his jaws from Andy Roberts a couple of years ago, a broken jaw. You know, straight away because back then, as I say, the helmet was not there. But then we got our revenge on them in 1979-80 when we went back there and then before that we went and played them in the Packer series and we got our revenge on them during that Packer era there we beat them up and then we get them back in 1979-80 so from then on we dominated them. And number of years we dominated them. We got them after 75-6 we got the best of them.
Okay. One other question.
Okay.
Yeah.
One other question. Fast forward to, 21st century. You just said that your whistling afforded you deeper concentration. I'm looking at West Indies batting lineup now, and it seems to me to be very brittle. And it's not for a lack of talent, but what seems to be a lack of the ability to concentrate and focus for any considerable length of time. What you chose whistling, what is it that you think? What is it that you think that these batsmen are lacking? It's not talent. I mean, we can look at Hetmyer and see the guy is very talented. We can look at Chai Hope and see he's talented. But to stick around and command their place at the wicket, they seem to be finding it very difficult. And, you know, they get to 25, 30 runs and they're gone. And to me, it might be, a weakness in the ability to concentrate. What are your thoughts on the matter?
Yes. I've seen that with a lot of them today. And what are they? One of the things that I take away, I'm going to give some negative and some positive. It is a little bit harder now because quite a few of the players now are playing the three formats of the game. Now, it's 2020 situation. I've seen them practicing the 2020 game. I've gone to one and two of the practice. And these guys just practice the ball out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
When in the 2020 game. The 50-over games give you a little bit more room to bat properly. But the 2020, it's a lot of interference. And the guys play the three format of the game. When you get to test cricket, you have to concentrate for a long period of time. Because state of the game, wicket condition, opposition, all of these things you have to assess as a batsman, as a bowler, you have to assess it. You might play in Jamaica, and the condition is a little different than you go to Trinidad, than you go to Guyana, and then Antigua. And depending on how the runner play is going, which sometimes it's just the pressure, not necessarily that the wicket is bad, but the pressure that you get under. Sometimes when you go to the wicket when it's 25-3 as a batsman, you go to the wicket. The opposition have far more time to attack you, constantly attacking you. And you as a batsman now have to be prepared to work hard and concentrate through this period. What I find happening to a lot of the guys, they are not prepared to work hard and stay at it, depend on their technical skills that they have to stay there, play each ball on its merit, and stay there. Time is also very important for them to realize, because this is 5 days of cricket, so you have to be able to bat for a day sometime when you get yourself in situations like that. And as long as you get past this period where you take back the initiative from the opposition, then you will be freer. You can do a little bit more then, and then you can take back the game away from them. But we never ever get through it to charge any time. If you see what's happening to us from there, have us on the run, we just crumble, really. Because the pressure, they just close in the pressure on you. And that is the most difficult time for you to back. I'll just give you an example of what I'm talking about. In the 1979-80 tour to Australia, in the final test in Adelaide, we batted first. I think we batted first. And at lunch, we were 90-something to one. And Viv was like something, a nut out or something like that. And I batted number 5. And in no time after lunch, we are 100-something for 4.
Mm-hmm.
So from 90 for 1, we are now 100 for 4. So we are down to the last peer of a recognized batsman in the side. That is Lloydy and myself. Is that the week? The next person coming in after Lloydy is Derek Murray coming in at number 6. So the Australian tail is up. They are all over us because me and Lloydy is at the wicket, and none of us is off the mark. We are at the wicket. We're leaving from 91, as I tell you, for 1 to 90 and for 4 or something like that. I don't have it exactly, but we are in that ballpark. Now, first thing, Ashley Mallett was the off-spin and he was operating someone in. And it was turning a bit. And Rodney Marsh is the keeper, and he's just hitting his gloves together, and he says, "Come on, guys, one of these and we are home. This is the last one. One of these and we are home." He just have to get through this year now, one of these and we are home, because this is the final top line batsman at Duke.
Okay.
And they are all over us. When I play forward to Ashley Mallett and the ball hit my pad, and everybody jump in, men all around me, you understand? And I said, "Well, I'm going to hit this guy over midweek, man. You understand? I'm going to hit this guy over midweek." And then I walk away from the wicket and say to myself, whatever I try to take this man over my wicket, he can get out, that deserves to be dropped. You hear the thinking? You have to be thinking out what you're going to do. And I am saying, I am going to hit this guy over mid-wicket. And then I said, no, if I decide to do that at this stage of the game and get out, I deserve to be dropped. You understand? The next thing to my mind was to put your technique into play. Get your left foot out. Get your left foot out. Get to the pitch of the ball. And keep working. And Lydia and I working. When they got the next wicket, it was 230 something for thing here when I got out. I made 49 in the test match. Lydia made 134. We made 300 and something from that. So, although we got ourselves into trouble, we always have a peer a guy. Because most times you're in a test match and you have six bats. The six of us, very rarely the six of us make runs. You probably have two. You probably have one man make 100 out of it. And another one make 90 something and two get 50. You're in 300, it's 300 runs that you have.
Yeah.
So it's variable. In three, you're going to find one or two guys going field from time to time, but you see that you play. But we always connect wherein two guys always bring us home if we run into trouble. If the top, the openers were always good, you have Fredericks and Greenwich early on. I mean, I worked with Fredo a few times. You know, we might get good start and then the next two get messed up and it don't work out. But invariable, we get a good total 300-400. But you have to remember, in the opening day of test match, majority of the time, the wicket has some moisture in it, and you might run into trouble early on. Early on, you might run into trouble where you lose two quick wickets. So if you lose two wickets by lunchtime, you are not doing too badly if you lose 2 men at lunch. And you're going well, because after lunch things tend to quiet down a bit more. It is a little more friendly, and you can do a little bit more. But the important thing is to get through that period. Another period I can tell you guys about was, I remember a test match we played in New Zealand, and I think Fredo got out in the first over, Desmond Haynes got out in the first over, and I went out at number 3 and joined Gordon. And Gordon and I took it to 10 minutes before lunch. And we were like 60 at 70 at 2 at lunch. I made, I think, 21 or something like that. And when we had a team meeting at lunch, the manager was commending us on how well we played. Because the kind of wicked condition that was there, if we didn't bat as well as we batted early on, the team put out. Looks like it pulled off 70 or 80 runs. You understand? But because we played so well in the early period that the ball was doing that much, we had to leave very late and we fight. We made it better for the last 4 batsmen that we have in the last 3 batsmen to come. So they see better condition out there, so they could get us up to 300-400 runs. But this is how it is when you play test match cricket. There's a period of time when it takes a lot of concentration and serious hard work out there in the middle. And you might not make 50 or 60, but you might make 35, and you might bat for 120 minutes, which helps your team, the other guys coming after you too. To make 100. That's the difference between the two situations. So what I have found with the younger guys a lot of times when I'm looking is like they don't learn as you play more. The more you play, the more you learn. And when you play against people on a regular basis, when you play, because most teams nowadays, you know the nucleus of the team is very similar. So you know the bowlers that you go and play against. Most times you play against them, the bowlers are pretty much the same guys coming back at you. So you must know what to expect, know what these guys do, and you can work accordingly. You don't. I say met him back in a test match in Jamaica, I think sometime last year, against India. And the man got about 3 or 4 chances. And I said to somebody who was watching the cricket, I said, listen, today's Tuesday, must make 100 today. Because when you get 4 chances in a game, and you back it. If you don't make 100, you're fooling around and you have that kind of talent. And as a little after that, he completely threw his wicket away. Completely
like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, completely threw your wicket away. That can happen.
Mm-hmm.
When the people allow you to get 4 chances, you have to capitalize.
Mm-hmm. You got
because the days will come when you are batting mm-hmm. so well and you hit a ball and it's flying and all of a sudden a man fly out of the air and he goes out of the air. So this is what I have seen from them, wherein they don't seem to be grasping and learning a lot from their previous experience at the wicket.
Mm-hmm.
Wicket
mm-hmm.
condition, where you play, how you approach your innings, what the wicket is doing. You can't play like this today. Today I can't play like this at some other part. Tomorrow you can't play like the same way you played yesterday over here. You can't play the same way. And then, to be fair to them, the amount of competition they are playing now, the 2020 cricket, the 50 over cricket, and the regularity in which they are playing now, sometimes it throw you off when a test match come along and these guys batting and you bat for half an hour, you start a bat for an hour or two. You decide to get in the 2020 mood.
Mm-hmm.
You decide to get the 2020 move because you're
okay,
back now.
Well,
and
time
and
hold
that is crazy.
We got a couple more guys who want to come in. Okay, Lawrence, can we just break a while because we have some eager guys waiting to talk to you. We have Mr. A guy took a photo with you and he is so excited about that photo. He calls himself Till. Jason, you're on. Then after Jatin, we have Mr. McKenzie.
Yeah, good evening, Lawrence. Well.
Yes, man. Good evening.
Welcome to the show. We meet a couple of times. I was at the CPL with Sivnar and Chandrapal. We hung out in lobby. Then we meet again in the India West Indies when you are with Mr. Lance Gibbs in a VIP stand.
Yes.
And then I remember the one story. We again meet on Sunday afternoon when the game was rained out. I forgot your first name from Jamaica, but we had a topic about, you know what, right? Sunil Gavaskar. And we had an argument with that friend. And you and me were the only one on one page, like Sunil Gavaskar did not play first test match in West Indies, period. He did not play the first test in that series.
Yes, he did not. He did not play the first test match when he came there.
But your friend and my friends were arguing like he played all 4 test match and scored that 720. That was the argument. And I still have that audio recorded.
Yes.
Anyway, nice to meet you again, boss. I will say to me, when I was a kid, at that time there was only radio. And maybe a newspaper at next day. I'm talking early 70s. There was no technology, especially TV did not came India until 77. But when I come to the U.S., the first thing I wanted to see, or I see in your whole career, is the one shot you played in 1974, I believe, against England. It was in Barbados.
That was in Barbados.
Yes, you hit that straight, flat, missile to square leg. And the way the media has exposed that particular shot during those days, again, there was no ODI when he played that shot. There was no T20. And it was just amazing, powerful shot, period. We've seen lots of good innings from West Indies. So I will say, I know you, me, and all these panelists on radio, almost everyone is 50 and up. But I like to have something from you as a coach. Basically, I'm coaching mine. What could be if you are allowed to play T20 in today's world? And all I need to know is what you will do in terms of shot selection and decision-making process about how strong shots need to be played. Again, if you are allowed to play T20, what do you do in terms of decision-making on shot selection? And if you're going for aggressive shot, how much power you think you can put behind?
Well, for me, I in the 20-day, 20-game, really and truly, I would be more or less like in the mold of, say, like a Jay Warden or a Tanga Carr and a Kendall Carr, you know, Ricky Ponkin. These guys more or less had the same form when they played in the 2020 game. The selection was always more or less the same. And for these guys, you know, the urgency is going to be there because it depends on what time you get into bat in a 2020 game. Sometimes you're there early, sometimes you're there later. If you're there later, then it becomes a totally different ball game for you. You really don't have much time to get yourself in. Probably just one ball to look at before you have to start to do something when you get in there in the later stage of the game. But early on, you can form a reasonable innings early on if you work the ball around properly, you know. And a lot of the guys concentrate on hitting more sixes than anything else. I mean, my thing would be to try to place the ball a little bit more and pick up turnover, just turn the strike over a bit more, you know, kicking it around singles here and there, and then you get a boundary here and there. You still pick up probably 8-9 runs over early on if you can work it like that. You know, that would be my thing. And this is a group of guys that I would tend to think if I was playing 2020, that is the group of players that my innings would be more or less relaxed. You know,
that is true.
Are the more around that those type of players? Yeah.
Because in today's generation, everybody wants to go for fours and sixes, nothing else. As soon as they get there, this is the only way to play.
It's mainly sixes, and it's so difficult to coach youngsters today, wherein you are trying to tell them to. Well, if I'm coaching, I would want people to try to hit the ball on the ground a little bit more early on, because you can improvise more as you go along. So as you go along, you can then go over the top a bit more. But early on, one would like to see, especially early batsmen, tucking it around a little bit more, pushing it around. I understand that with the power play where the field is in early on, you have to take some more chances early up to get it over the infield.
Sure.
But I suppose with your good technical skills that you have, you'll be able to pick your ball that you can still go at. And as I say, today the bowlers are much smarter. They are much smarter too, you know. Fielding is much better than in our time, because we were more or less the first group of guys who were pretty much into the fitness role. And then the modern people has taken it to another level, where the cricketers are much fitter than they usually be, you know. Everybody is fitter. Fielding is much better than when I played. You know, the fielding in the field is much better. The guys are quick. They are strong and they are quick. There's no doubt. Again, equipment is better too. The bats are so much. The bats are so much. The bats, there's so much improvement on the bats that the edges can go for six. When you get it off the edges, when you get it off the edges, they go for six. When you get it off the edges, today. You know, so there's a lot of improvement to the sport. I'd still like to see a few things looked at. Like, for instance, I don't like the switch hit. I believe that should be illegal in the game. I believe that should be illegal and rule out. Because I don't think... I think a bowler has to tell the umpire which hand you're going to bowl with, which side of the stump you're going to bowl with. And the batsman, if you're in a right-hand posture, you're not supposed to be able to turn into a left-hand posture. I think you can maneuver the ball with your hands, where you can play a reverse sweep by just using your hands to maneuver the ball, but not your feet. If you change your feet position to a left-hander, that should be illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great news, boss, today. And for the panelists, let me conclude on Lawrence Lau. This boss is one of the unique batsmen West Indies ever had, I will say. There's a couple of things he has done is absolutely amazing. Number one, he was the first one on his debut to score a double century and century in the very first game. That was the unique as the opening batsman. Number two,
did you hear that today was his anniversary of his when he made his debut? Two?
Yeah.
Okay. The guy just remind me.
Yes.
Guys, just remind me. So when I finish the show, I'm going to have some champagne.
And number two, I think one time I was with Gary Sauvers and we had a discussion, and it came out to the point where we were talking about West Indies opening batsmen, and I'm talking this one is way back in late 90s when I met him, and it did came out the Lawrence name first time in terms of legends, I will say. And if you look at the other way, he's one of the four West Indies batsmen who has scored triple centuries in a test. So he is in a lineup between Sobers, Gale, and Lara, and I believe Rao is the only fourth batsman out there who has scored triple centuries. So nice to have you on the show tonight, and it's my pleasure to meet you four times. Even it's on audio communication. I appreciate coming out and having the opportunity for me to interact with you, and I learned something new for the coaching. Thank you, sir.
Indeed. And we have Mr. McKenzie. Mr. McKenzie, he wishes he could get to umpire match against you.
I'm going to be very quick because we don't have much time. Lawrence,
yes.
I don't know if you know Professor George Beckford at University of West Indies. He used to teach economics, and his mantra was, if I'm marking your papers and Yagaro gets out, everybody fails. Fortunately, that didn't happen during my time up there. You made runs, so I was able to pass my economic exam. But on the other hand, give me a commentary on our present-day West Indies players. I'm looking at guys like, you made some allusion to it. I'm looking at guys like Hetmyer and Blackwood. Give me a commentary on these guys, particularly. What is happening here?
Well, as I said earlier, I don't know how hard they work by themselves if they get that opportunity. I used to work very hard by myself. I had to do arranged practice by myself, wherein I would bat for an hour and a half, just me, and I arranged bowlers to come and bowl at me. So apart from what you do with your club and when you're playing for Jamaica, when you go out for Jamaica, and then when you play for the West Indies, you will have to do much more for yourself. And it's even better for the guys today because the game is a fully professional sport now, where these guys, cricket is their job now. Unlike when we played, we had to go to work and then in the evening we have to go practice and then we have to do things like you do and practice. In the mornings before I play a match, like a senior cup match, I used to wake up 5 o'clock in the morning and reach to carry out at my workplace. And I go over there and back for 2 hours before I go and play a senior cup game.
Okay.
You know, so today when you get paid to play the game, you can work your schedule out very well, wherein when you are not playing, you can arrange your own practice, wherein you can do 2 hours, you can bat for 2 hours, because in test cricket, this is what it is. You have to bat for long periods of time. So it means you have to simulate that kind of thing, wherein you do it in practice, and you have to practice with a purpose. You can't just go out there and just hit the ball and practice. You have to practice with a serious purpose. you know. And when I used to have a regiment, when I used to train in the earlier days, when I used to train, the first couple of minutes you're at the wicket, you are working on your defensive skills, you know. And
okay,
you're working
okay.
on your defensive skills. Then
great.
Through the middle, you open it up a little bit more, where you start to play a few more shots here and there. You work with it on the inside, depending on where you think you have some weaknesses, you start to work on that. If you start to get out, I mean, when I played against somebody like Jeff Thompson, these are things you have to observe as a player. You're playing against some guys who flip the ball onto you very quickly. They are very hard to hook at. And they deceive you. Andy Roberts was one of those kind of bowlers wherein he would deceive you. He'd bowl you a slower bounce, and then you will get in there and you will hook it for four or whatever it is, and you feel comfortable that, you know, yeah, if he bowls it again, I can hook him. But by the time you get him, the next time he bowls this bounce at you and you get there, it's on to you before you even get into position, it's on to you. You know,
mm-hmm.
So these are
there
things that you have to be aware of when you play against certain people, wherein you can leave certain shots out when you play against certain people until you're sure.
Thank you. Thank
you.
You
don't just take it on like
I
don't know how much work they put in by themselves. I don't know how much work they put in by themselves, but. You know, this is one of the things I would recommend if I was, say, talking to one of these young people, that you have to put in far more work. If you're going to play test cricket and you're a batsman, you have to put in far more work in practice, in the practice session. You have to put far more serious work in your practice session and practice with serious purpose.
Okay. We have two more guys coming on before we... Simon, a short question, and then we bring in Ivor. Simon?
Yes, I've been listening to the,
yes,
the great...
Yes, you have a short question for Lawrence?
I was listening to the great Lawrence Rowe. Two questions, Lawrence Rowe. I'm from Montserrat. I went to England as a teenager, learned my cricket there and played for a club in Middlesex.
Simon,
I was a number two batsman. I faced a lot of fast bowlers, but I'll tell you, I prefer to play the spin. Do you prefer to play a spinner or a fast bowler?
Well, for me, it didn't really, I didn't have a preference, really. I mean, when you're playing against top-class fast bowling, it's always, you know, nobody can say that they love to play against top-class fast bowling, especially when you was playing on wickets that was really quick. You know, and as I say, early on in the show, I was mentioning that when we played back then, you didn't have any protective gear. You just have your cap on your head. So you had to be precise in terms of your execution, your technique, and your skills. You had to be able to get yourself in the proper position when you were playing against a fast bowling team. Or else, you know, it's no tomorrow for you. If you make a mistake, you are out of it. I mean, you get knocked down, and sometimes when you get knocked down, you don't get a chance to come back.
Okay.
So, yeah, sometimes
okay,
you don't get a chance to come back, you know.
Yeah, thanks
a
lot.
For me, I think I was a fairly well-balanced player wherein I could play both bowlings fairly well. I was a good player against him, and I think I was equally as good a player against fast bowling.
Well, I wish you would come back again because there's so many things we have to ask you.
Yes.
But the time is running short, so I'll let somebody else ask another question.
Yes, Ivor,
yes,
you're on. Ivor,
yes,
your
good
friend,
evening, sir. Lawrence Yagoro.
Yes, my brother. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, I'm good. Well, you would have touched on most of the things that I wanted to say, but I'm going to just say this. I believe the players must put in more on their time and forget about some of these coaches. Coaches don't have enough time and no tour with these lot of cricketers. When you do your tweet,
I remember, regardless of what the coach might coach you and what the coach might tell you, when you walk out of that pavilion, there's you and you alone. There's nobody else.
You and you alone, exactly.
You and you alone.
Windows. So
you,
I believe in that.
All of that coach tell you. if you can't put it together for yourself, if you can't put it together for yourself, it makes no sense.
No sense. And the other thing I want to say quickly is that I believe in strong leadership. Leaders, you know, leaders pull you, and I believe coaches push you. I believe that Lloyd and those guys were those kind of guys who are going to pull you. We're going to go together. When you're pushing people out the way, like coaches do that, I don't believe in that. Good manager, a good cricketer, and cricketers with sense who are fit enough and have player awareness, match awareness. You said it. You must know if you can only score 40 without losing a wicket instead of bang, bang, and make 120 for six and losing match.
Yes.
That's what I believe.
It's
we don't have enough time. I wish you all the best.
The whole point about simply test cricket, as I mentioned earlier, is most times you play early on. If you win the toss and you decide to bat, most wickets have some moisture in it. The first 2 hours of playing on that morning going to be rough. And if the opposition have good bowling, they are going to give you the time of your life. So you have to be prepared to be patient. And you have to be clear to be looking. Take your chances. Whenever you get something to put away, put it away. When the bowler bowl you something that you have to respect, you have to respect it. You have to leave. You have to. I'm going to give you guys a story. In the 1976 tour of England, we were playing against Warwickshire. And myself and Fredericks opened the inning. And Fredo got out in the first over. And we were playing against Bob Willis and David Brown. These are two English fast bowlers. And Viv came to join me at the wicket. But I tell you guys, it's England we're talking about. And this wicket, it was just, the ball was seaming and swinging all over the place. We're talking about ball that swing into you during the year, and when it hit the wicket, it seem away from you. So we're talking about something coming into you, and then when it hit the pitch, it seem away from you.
Lawrence, could you hold your thoughts here for me? Let me alert our listeners, because we should be off the air at 9, but we're going to extend the broadcast for a little bit to make you express all your opinions, at least some more opinions. But those who are on, they can stay on. But we're probably going to lose our internet audience. So the folks who are on via the phone would not lose the whatever we are saying. So Lawrence, go right ahead and we continue.
Yes. So I was saying the ball was seeming around, and these guys were bowling some sharp deliveries. And Viv and myself was out there, and we're Baba weaving, and we're ducking. And some guys in the stand said, "I thought you West Indians could hook. What you guys doing out there?"
Yeah.
"I thought you West Indians could hook." And we fought until lunch. At lunch, we were like 50-something for one.
Wow.
And we came back after lunch. And Viv and I put it on them. I made 121 and Viv made 87. We put it on them after lunch. So the point I am making to you guys is that wicket was doing so much in the morning period. And Fredo got out early and then Viv came and joined me. We had to be batting like crazy, leaving, ducking, bobbing and weaving, and playing each ball of its merit. So by lunch, we were 50-odd for one. 50-odd for one at lunch in 2 hours play. So we were a bit slow. But there was a reason why, because the wicket was doing so much. After lunch, when we came back, because I wasn't even in the test side at the time, I remember a player, when I was about 70-something, I hit David Brown a half drive, and he said, "Fucking hell, if you are in the reserve, fucking hell." Because I wasn't in the team at the time in the final 11. You understand? And I made 121 in that game and retained that base in the team. And we ended up making, I think we made 400 and something and just batted one time in the game.
Wow.
So this is what I'm talking about with the younger guys. you know, in when you're playing test match cricket, there's a period of time when you might be going slow and you might have to work a little harder, but you will always make it up later on. You will make it back up later on when you're getting fully and you're batting well. And that is the time now you must capitalize. You can't give it away when you finish doing all that hard work. You finish doing all the hard work in the morning when the ball was steaming, singing, moving, all about. And then in the afternoon now when things get a little better for batting condition, you give your wicket away.
Okay, Ivor, do you have another? Ivor, anyone?
No, like you said, I'll give away because he touched on something there that he would have told us already too, that when they were bobbing and weaving in a test match too, he just told Viv, man, take it easy, relax. And I showed him the story where they just buy time and just play, like you said, each ball on its merit. And then you assess the situation and you play with your head. We don't play with head. I don't think these guys are playing with their head. They're playing for money. I'm going to make one last point. Yeah, guys.
And then you see,
that's my dream.
That you have to remember the opposition is sledging you too. They are there and they are, I mean, when we play, the people were very spicy too with their mouth. You know, I remember Cali Chiron and myself batting in his way, and I made the 202. A lot of people don't even remember that Alvin made 100 in that game. You know, Cali Chiron made 100 and something in that game. And I remember when I was about 80 something in the innings. Sar sent me something. Kelly was batting, and Greggy was giving him some problems there. And Greggy was, Tony Greg, this is, was cursing at him and thing. And Kelly was there getting all riled up about it. And I got down the wicket and I said to him, man, Kelly, listen, man, the sun is hot out here today, you know. So, listen, you don't make this man top you out. Just settling in the mid-afternoon, when you settle in the mid-afternoon, then we have to stop talking, then you get going. And so said, so done in the mid-afternoon, when Kelly and I start to take it to them. You don't hear a word out of them, man. They were just running down ball. they were just running down balls all day long. And early on, they were chatting like crazy. All over you know. But I never used to take them on. When they were chatting and coming at you, I never take them on. I was always just landing on my hat. You know. I was just glancing under my hat when they come into my face and see what they want to say. It's the only one time I take on Jeff Arnold in Jamaica. Jeff Arnold in Jamaica bowled me a couple of bouncers in Jamaica, and I it came up in the pavilion a few times. It came up in the pavilion, and he came down the wicket and said, "Hey, when you come up to Derbyshire, I'm gonna hit you every day, dog. When I get you on the green top in England, I'm gonna hit you." So I just tell him, I just remind him. I said, "Well, we're not in England today. We're right here at Provider Park. You have to try and do it today."
Yes.
You have to try and do it.
Okay. One last question. Question, and it might not even be a question. I remember when Lloyd was on his way out, there was big talk. We know Viv was the vice captain, but we know traditionally the vice captain don't get the captaincy. In the West Indies, you know, from in the Hunt days and stuff, they just skip over the vice captain. And the big talk was that is Lawrence Rowe is going to be the next captain. We don't think it's going to be Viv. But then here came the South Africa. Captain Jamaica, if you wouldn't have gone, do you think that you would have grabbed the opportunity to captain the West Indies team and grasp it with both hands?
I don't think so. I would never say never, but I don't think so. I believe the injuries had set me back. I had quite a few injuries that had set me back so badly. You know, because I was in and out of the team because of injuries. You know, when I was at my best, injury take me out, and I come back again and got back on top of the world. Injury take me out again. You know, so about 3 or 4 times, you know, when I was on top of the world, injuries came along and took me out. And I think that was always a problem for me now in terms of West Indies selection, because they started talking about now the injury factor, you know. So
and the grass, and the grass, allergic to grass.
And a bad allergy to grass too, you know. Allergy to grass, and I used to wear contact lens for a while. So I mean, contact lens users who use contact lens, and then with that allergy stuff, you know, with your eyes scratching you and the watery eyes, they would tend to know some of the problems that I went through during that period of time. And I was fortunate enough that although I went through all those problems, I was able to play for over 10 years, you know. So
wow.
And if you look back at my career, there's absolutely no doubt at all that if I was not unlucky with the injury, I would have been ranked in the top three West Indian of all time. If I did not go through all of those, I would have been right there. I think.
Point taken.
Because when you look at my record, if you look at my first 12 test matches I played where I was, just go back and look at the first 12 test matches I played where I was in terms of, I mean, world cricket, they were ranking me amongst Bradman and Headley and these people during that period of time. But as I say, you know, the injuries take me out at some very bad time. And then that is one of the reasons why I think that I would probably not have captained the West Indies team per se, because Viv was a little bit younger than I was, and then he had come on and had done so well that he was the likely man. You see, the thing with Conrad Hunt, when he was the vice captain and they passed him by, he ran into such a prolific cricketer in Sir Gary Sobers. Because I heard that was a recommendation from Frank Ward. Remember, Frank Ward was the captain.
Yes.
And then when Frank was giving it up, he recommended Sobers for the captaincy over his vice captain Conrad Hunt. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was so tough. You know, it was tough either way. I suppose if you're Conrad Hunt, you would have been mad with it. Some people have to say that is why he had retired so young too, and that he left it that young. But one could understand Sobers was now getting to the peak of his career, and he was so great, you know, that he took it over and he did so well with the team after that. And quite a few people forget how great that West Indies team was. That one was,
yeah,
I would say, the first great West Indies team who produced us. That one under Frank Worrell, that comes under Sobers, and then Lloyd Steed. Those were the two great the era West Indies cricket. I find that those were the top teams in West Indies cricket.
Great. Lawrence, it has been great. I just want you to give us your final thoughts and include some questions for the panelists. The change of West Indies administration, Hetmyer and Lewis being axed, return of Bravo. Wait, just let me give you all, and you can answer them all. Pollard being elevated as captain of West Indies side, and if you had a batsman to bat with to win a match, whom would you choose? So the first one is the change of administration, Hetmyer and Lewis being axed, the return of Bravo, and the elevation of Pollard to the captaincy of the white ball teams, and finally a batsman whom you would bat with if you wanted to win a match and you're in a tight spot.
Well, I've answered that one earlier, Clap. That would have been Viv.
With Viv, okay.
Yeah, that would have been with Viv, yes. On the administration, I must say that I was very impressed with the current president, in that when India played here, I was called personally by his secretary and was told that I was invited to his box, which was, I think, was refreshing and very nice that he had seen it fit to do that. That was never done to me before by any other administration. And I was very pleased to see that he had done that. And I was invited to his box in the game. Had a very good time. Met him for the first time. He was very warm to me. And we chatted a lot about West Indies cricket and things like that. And I think that, you know, he has some very good ideas moving forward. But it's not going to be easy for him. He has his work cut out for him. And if he put some good people there, I suppose, they can he can make some changes. He's open to everybody. And I like that attitude. On Etemaya, I think that he's a young man with quite a bit of talent. But I personally thought that after that India series they should have dropped him. I was one of them who advocated for that because I think that when you are young and you get quite a few chances to play, and you behave so reckless with the opportunities you got, you must be put out and go back out there, and you must realize that it's going to take hard work and performance to get you back in the team. But fortunate for him, he had played very well in a few matches quite recently and got a few good scores. And they didn't give him the punishment that I would have given him before. So I can only wish him all the best from here on and hope that he will move from strength to strength in his career, you know, hopefully. Which was the other one?
The return of Pollard, of Bravo, and the
I'm a big Pollard fan. I think that he has a good grasp of the game. I've spoken to him a few times. I've met him and spoke to him a few times up here, and I honestly felt that he was a better batsman than a lot of people give him credit for. He didn't get to play a lot of test match cricket back then when he had the opportunity to do so. And with the grievance that was in West Indies cricket that pushed him out of it for a long time, I think what they have done by naming the captain of the team is a much better bet than Brathwaite being the captain of the side. I was never a fan of Brathwaite being the captain of the team. I didn't believe that. I don't think you want to reward people to captain teams that performance is not there. I think you need, the captain must be a good performer to be there. And I didn't think Brathwaite, after his early promise, didn't show that. I met him up here, nice guy. Spoke to him a few times, and I said to him, man, what you needed was to do. If I was around with you, you would have been a fast bowler, not this medium pace thing that you're coming up with. You are a big guy. This is what you should be doing. You should be bowling real fast, and then with the batting that you do, you'd be a superb cricketer for West Indies cricket if you were a fast bowler first. And when I talk about fast bowler, meaning a fast bowler, the guy's big, young and big, and if early on in his career I was around him, that is what I would have suggested to him, to turn himself into a tremendous fast bowler. Good move for Pollard as being the captain. I wish him well. Bravo. Being back, well, we're talking about going to the World Cup, so I suppose it's not a bad move as long as he has some more in him. It's not a bad move to have him among the squad. I think the experience is always good. When you go to a World Cup, you go to win. You don't go to experiment at a World Cup. You go to win. So you have to put out your best guys to win the World Cup. So I don't see that as a bad move.
It has been a treat. Go ahead. Go ahead, finish.
No. Did you have another one that you had asked me about?
I'm just going to ask the panelists if they have one more question. I know Cardinal was short
on one. So, Cardinal, final question for Lawrence?
No, that's okay. That's okay. I mean,
okay.
I just wish that we would have him. I just wish that we would have him more often because
he has
so much to
offer.
He's the kind of guy who comes from an era. This is the kind of guy who comes from an era that captivated us. And we would have liked to be on the field to hear some of these stories and really be a part of what's going on. You know, kind of like the fly on the wall. I mean, we were listening from our little transistor radios and so on, you know. But, you know, I mean, somebody came back from Barbados and told me about that 302. And, you know, it kind of put shivers in me. Boy, I wish I was there. But, you know.
A lot of people have it as being one of the finest in India they have seen in Test cricket. And, you know, I talk about a lot of people who are, I mean, 175 in Australia, too, which was highly, highly talked about. And I made 157 in South Africa. A lot of people don't know about that, but I made 157 in Durban in South Africa, which get a lot of ranking as well, too. I see a few, and for the Antiguans there, the Antiguans must have seen that 135 and made a World Series for Antigua.
Yes.
In Antigua, 70. You know, the Antiguans, the country that night, you know, they call me Sir Lawrence in Antigua.
Yeah. Let me just remind you about the shot you played against Andy Roberts. Antigua Recreation Ground has a hill. And by the time Andy Roberts' foot landed, that back drive was on the turf through mid-on.
I think I mean 60. You're talking about that game where the Combined Islands play against Jamaica,
against
right?
The Combined Islands. That was the shot I remember to this day.
I remember that. I made 60 something in the match. Yes.
One of the best shots, if not the best. I classify that as one of the best shots I've ever seen. And there was no effort. The timing was superb.
On the ground. Yes, and those days was strong too, because even at the regional level, you know, when we get to face up against each other, because on tour we tend to jive each other on tour. So when we get together and play against each other, it's always a good rivalry when we meet against each other. You know, so Andy was not easing up. He was just coming, you know.
I remember.
Yes.
I have a statement and a question.
Yaga, open your eyes. I am coming at you today.
Mr. Lawrence, one of my statements, I know everybody was glad to see Bravo come back, but I just hope this is not just for the World Cup, because what happened, the World Cup, all of these guys want to play the World Cup because the attention is on the World Cup, and after that, some of these guys forget about West Indies and go on places to make their money. So I hope that is not one. And my other question to you, when you play cricket, you make West Indies team by performance or just fitness? Because the reason why I'm asking you this, Cornwall is big, everybody know. The last selectors, what they have, most of these guys was from Barbados. And these guys would not pick Cornwall because of Cornwall's size. And for my thinking is, cricket is played by performance, not your size, because size and fitness cannot score runs, or cannot feel, or cannot get wicket. It's your performance is what does that. Well, thank God he's the selector change and he's on the team, and I just wish him all the best. But people must stop criticizing because of his size. Watch his performance, because this young man works hard at his game and he practices a lot. Some of these other guys, they reach a standard, they don't want to practice no more. They just think like they're up there. And for somebody like
that should get his chance
like everybody else.
Yeah, no, I totally agree that performance is what gets it done. And this is one of the things that I did not like about West Indies cricket in the last couple of years, wherein too many people was getting in the team because they make 30, or they make 40, or they make 50. as a batsman, that is not what it's all about. You have to be scoring 100 at a level to get there. And if you're playing, you can't just make 30 and 20 to make a difference. That is not what the performance that we should judge people by, these youngsters by. You have to be there to get big scores. And 100 is the hallmark for a batsman. 100 is really the hallmark for a batsman. 5 wickets is the hallmark for a bowler in this match. So what I am saying is that too many times we pick people because they are young and talented, and they don't make any runs, and we continue to do it. We don't want to do that. We have to. Performance is what we want from them. They have to perform.
Jatin, your final question. Jatin? Well, Lawrence, it has been a treat, an absolute pleasure to have you on. And this shall not ever be the last. We shall endeavor to...
All right,
Thank you so very much on behalf of all the panelists.
It was nice, and I appreciate it. And I'm going to now go and have that champagne that you guys remind me about.
All right. Thank you so very much. Blessed evening. Indeed, it was a pleasure.
Yes, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yes, and
bye-bye.
But gentlemen, we have come to the end of the show. Mr. McKenzie, why don't you send us home?
Well, I just want to say it's a very exciting show, very well put together by you, sir. I really want to say congratulations to you for this show. And all our listeners, birthday clubbers, and so forth, we want to wish them all the very best. Have a good week, and I see you on the radio next Sunday.
Yes.
God's willing. Thank you.
Good night, all. Have a blessed
good night, all.
Evening. Good night.